One of my favorite patients in the world, Admiral Doug Fears. He was the admiral for the Coast Guard here in Florida. He just retired. He was also Homeland Security Advisor under both Trump and Bush. He's a big deal. This guy's a big government, like, badass. This guy literally went from, like, not knowing anything about this type of medicine to, like, the biggest advocate in the world.
There is only one supplement that I think almost everyone on this planet should be taking, and that's a full-spectrum and highly bioavailable magnesium supplement because, well, let's face it, ever since the Industrial Revolution, our soil has been depleted of magnesium, and therefore our food is depleted of magnesium. And on top of that, our modern environments, which are inherently overstimulating and stressful, are constantly depleting our body of magnesium. And unlike other nutrients, this is not something that your body can produce on its own. It literally needs to get it from the diet. And one individual kind of magnesium alone is not enough. You actually need 7 different kinds to support over 300 biochemical reactions that help regulate your nervous system, red blood cell production, energy production, managing stress and emotions, etc. And so the folks at Bioptimizers have made it very easy and convenient to add back in what the modern world leaves out. They've created Magnesium Breakthrough. Now, I've been taking this for the past 2 years, and the biggest benefits that I've seen are related to my evening wind-down sessions and my sleep. I tend to be pretty overactive in the evenings, just totally overthinking everything that I do. And this has helped me wind down and get more restorative, more efficient sleep. So I wake up feeling way more refreshed, more energized, more clear, more ready for the day. And the way that I see it, sleep is upstream of essentially every other health and wellness related habit and decision. Because if you're sleeping better, automatically you're going to have more regular cravings. You're going to have higher insulin sensitivity. You can derive more of all these inputs like fitness, right? You make more gains, you gain more muscle, you burn more calories, and you wake up feeling refreshed so that you can do it again and again and again. And then beyond the fitness, you have more energy to go for a walk, to do fun activities with friends. You are less stressed, so you can socialize anxiety-free. And you're also going to be retaining, refreshing, and refining your skills and information much, much better. So you won't forget any names. And yeah, I mean, like I said, over 300 biochemical processes that you're supporting with magnesium. Then sleep, I mean, wow, better sleep is just a better life in general. So I found it extremely helpful on a personal level, and I'm sure that you guys will find it helpful too. Your mind and body, and maybe even your spirit will thank you. So anyway, if you want to get a sweet little discount off of this amazing, amazing magnesium supplement from Bioptimizers, all you have to do is visit the show notes. So you scroll down right now, takes just a couple seconds, and boom, you'll have access to all 7 different kinds of magnesium that your body needs. All you have to do is hit the link and use code KYP for Know Your Physio. KYP. That's all. Enjoy 10 to 22% off depending on the package you choose, whether or not you subscribe. I'm obviously subscribed because I don't even want to think about whether or not I'm going to get this essential supplement in the mail. And yeah, hope you guys enjoy that awesome stuff. And that's all for now. I'll see you guys on the show. All right. Well, Dr. Laurence, here we are on the Know Your Physio podcast. Before we jump into regenerative medicine, mitochondrial health, and all the amazing things that you offer in your incredible office in Sarasota, Florida, I want to start up with a little bit of a story of how I first heard of you and how I became interested in everything that it is you do and everything you guys have to offer. And it was a very particular experience that I had the pleasure of sharing with one of our dear friends, Ben Greenfield. It was my first time meeting Ben in person. We had set up this spearfishing trip in North Carolina. And, I remember I was in an Uber and he was already at the Airbnb. I was in an Uber. I was getting ready to see him. And all of a sudden, I had this feeling, the sensation of, man, who really is behind that door? What if this is a joke and it's not really Ben behind that door, right? So I'm like, I mean, I started to get kind of stressed as soon as the Uber, was pulling up to the Airbnb. And anyway, I get all my gear out of the car, and I'm walking towards the door. I get this like rush, you know, this endorphin rush. All of a sudden, one of his sons opens the door. I think it was River that opens the door. And I walk in, I immediately knew where I was. I immediately knew who I was with. And within 5 minutes of meeting Ben Greenfield, I had about, I think it was like 300 milligrams of melatonin in my ass. And I was snorting, and I was snorting oxytocin and Amazonian herbs that you created. And I think it helped me dial down from that intense sensation of what am I getting myself into, and immediately helped to create a sense of presence and love and just absolute fun and camaraderie just right off the bat. So I want to say, first of all, thank you for everything that you do. And thank you for helping me make, helping us invest in that depth of presence and fun so early on in our experience, where it really translated to this intimate connection for the remaining week that we spent together. I think it was a really, really, really pivotal moment that you helped indirectly to facilitate. And I can't thank you enough for that. It was so much fun. And I think that's maybe an appropriate, if you think so, an appropriate way to introduce you to the show.
Yeah. Well, Andreas, thank you for having me on your show. And I remember you telling me that story after it happened, and it was, you know, just hilarious. And I know that you're probably not the only one that has had that welcome.
To say the least.
Ben and I have been kind of like, you know, collaborating back and forth. And, you know, as I'm going through a lot of beta testing with products, you know, I'll send them to Ben, and Ben will kind of play around with it and give me feedback to, you know, tweak it here or tweak it there. But yeah. And sometimes, you know, I've got a story I want to share with you about Ben. So I was formulating this, this really concentrated CBD because I wanted a fairly small bottle that had a lot of doses, right? That was convenient to carry with you. And if you wanted to take even large doses, like 100, 150 milligrams for sleep, because studies show that that can be really helpful to really promote deep sleep, that you would have it there. So I sent him this bottle, and he didn't read. I had a sticky note saying, be careful with this, call me before you take it, right? So I get a call, and he says, Dr. J, like, you know, are you sure there's no THC in that CBD? And I said, well, there's the legal amount, right? And I said, how much did you take? He says, a couple of dropperfuls, you know? So it was like,
oh my gosh.
And so it was like late in the next day, and he was still kind of like, you know, buzzed from the CBD. So,
oh my goodness. Well, he said, hey, look, you know, I've got this thing that I just put in my ass, this melatonin suppository. And here, snort this stuff, and we're going to do a guided breathwork session. And all of a sudden, I was like, I mean, this sounds like an initiation. It sounds like a lot of fun too. But, you know, how am I going to feel when I wake up in the morning? He's like, you might be a little, you know, sluggish, whatever, but we'll wake you up if we need to. All I remember was, you know, typically when I change environments and I'm traveling to a new place and I'm sleeping on a new bed, I don't get very good sleep. I remember I got amazing sleep, and I woke up feeling extremely refreshed, which I was very surprised. You know, I was very surprised to feel refreshed. So, well, can you take us through, before we jump into all this amazing science, when it comes to all things, you know, mitochondrial health and such, can you take us through these supplements that I took and what they are and how they work?
Sure. So we'll start with the melatonin. I got really ill at one point in my life, and at some point on my healing journey, I discovered Russell Ryder, who's kind of the foremost authority on melatonin. He's got his PhD and his MD, and he was literally the scientist that first discovered that the pineal wasn't just a worthless gland. Before that, the science was like, well, do you really need that? So he came out and was able to shed light on how important the pineal was. And this was in the 60s. And so he went on to father hundreds of articles on melatonin and how melatonin can help with a variety of different diseases. And when you start to look into this, Andreas, you start almost thinking this is a panacea. How is this possible that this one molecule could have such amazing, far-reaching benefits to almost every disease known to man? I mean, cancer, gut issues, neurological issues, heart, liver, kidney, mood issues. So I was recommended by a doctor, Frank Schallenberg. I don't know if you're familiar with Dr. Schallenberg or not.
Nope, not yet.
He He is one bad mofo. He was like the first functional doctor in the 80s, and he brought ozone. You've heard of ozone,
yep.
right? So
yep.
he's the guy responsible for introducing ozone in the United States. And so he's kind of really known for the ozone, but he has a big cancer practice in Reno, Nevada. And I went out there to do some internship with him. And then he said, hey, you know, because I was having some issues with my brain. I was mostly better, but word finding and, you know, memory wasn't 100%. And so he said, you know, why don't you go on 200 milligrams of melatonin? And my jaw dropped. I'm like, 200 milligrams. And so I started doing that. And at first, you know, like what Ben had warned you about is like, you know, I was really tired in the morning when I first started taking that high amount. And it was just my body processing and detoxing and kind of when you add that much cellular energy, and we'll talk about how it does that from a mitochondrial standpoint, you can start going through some deep cleaning mechanisms. And in fact, melatonin has been shown to even purge and clean heavy metals out of the brain. So how does it work? So melatonin is produced by every mitochondria in the body. So every cell within it, the mitochondria, when they get to a stress, any type of stress, so it could be athletic stress. I know that you talk to a lot of athletes and endurance athletes and so forth. And so that's a tremendous amount of stress to the body, right? If you were to be get an infection, okay, that is a lot of stress to the body. If you go out and spend the day in the sun and you get really bad sunburn, that's a stress to the body. If you get poor nutrition, you know, you can kind of go down the line and you can talk about all the different types of stresses, and they all have one thing in common, is they all introduce some type of inflammation in the body, which is the body's, you've exceeded the adaptation ability of the body. And so you have this hormetic curve. And so you have what I say is in that you have like the familiar zone. This is where we're doing things that aren't really challenging the adaptation system in the body. It's just like stuff that's really easy for us. And then we get into that hormetic zone, which is what we want to train in, right? But we don't want to overtrain. We don't want to get into the danger zone, because when we get into the danger zone, we've exceeded the body's ability to replenish the glycogen storages in the muscles, the tendons' ability, and the muscles' ability to endure that much athletic endurance and stress. The sun, if it's a sunburn, the ability for the skin to have that antioxidant buffer to the rays. So when we look at melatonin sits in the mitochondria, and it's sitting there and it's watching the system. And as the system starts to get to that outer limit of the hormetic window, then that's when melatonin really starts to get produced, right? And once melatonin has its effect and it runs out of its ability to raise that ceiling, you can still get into that danger zone. However, that ceiling is a bit higher when you have more melatonin in the system, when the cell can make melatonin. And they've done studies that show that if an individual takes exogenous melatonin, it actually goes in there and it acts as if you were to make it yourself, right? And so you can raise that hormetic window by taking it exogenously or improving your body's ability to make it itself. But if you look at the curves, Andreas, as we get older, you know, we just, it's a downhill deal. You know, you produce less and less melatonin as you get older, no matter how much you biohack it, no matter how much blue blocking glasses you're going to wear. It's just having birthdays is going to have that effect on melatonin. So I would almost argue that supplementing with melatonin for any individual that's under a number of different types of stressors could be super important. There's a whole nother kind of way that you can look at this, because it's disease, and you know, you can look at aging as a disease, right? You can look at arthritis and the wear and tear of your body as a disease. It's lack of ease in the body. But then there's all these really terrible diseases like cancer, right? And diabetes and degenerative neurologic disorder. And all of these have a very common narrative that there's been too much inflammation that the body can't buffer. So I would almost argue that melatonin is the ultimate resilience molecule that allows us to handle more stress without getting into a disease state.
And so what you're describing is that melatonin, independent of its function in driving sleep, independent of that, on its own, it is a powerful buffer. It is a powerful mechanism for recovery. It helps to repair our body in general. Is this what you're saying? Am I getting this clear? It's independent of the sleep that it can facilitate. But obviously, if we get both things working simultaneously, if they're working properly for producing melatonin and we're getting the sleep that we need, then we're getting the best of both worlds.
Right.
But just the sleep alone isn't enough, especially as we age. We have to be particular about, are we optimizing our melatonin production or are we supplementing it?
I love that you just brought that to light, because it is, we're talking about beyond sleep. That's why my book, Melatonin Miracle Molecules, is beyond sleep. There's some amazing things that melatonin does for sleep. Obviously it improved, but we're talking about high physiological doses. Super physiological dosing of melatonin is what this is. So it's hundreds of milligrams. And before we kind of get into that a little any more deep, there's a lot of people that are probably listening to this, saying, hey, that's dangerous. My doctor told me don't take more than 2 milligrams, right? There's some flawed research out there it came in kind of early. And when you get research, the first research that comes out usually kind of shadows and clouds a lot of doctors, so that when new research comes out, oftentimes it doesn't update a lot of our medical communities, views on different things. Testosterone, there's a lot surrounding that as well, especially with prostate. But with regards to melatonin, there's no toxic level to melatonin. They've done studies where it would be like giving somebody 150,000 milligrams and they stop the study because there's no toxicity. So you don't have to worry about that. And then there's also no negative feedback loop. So when you take melatonin, you're not ever going to stop your own production. So you make melatonin in your pineal, and this is what regulates the sleep, the sleep-wake cycle. And that melatonin that's produced in the pineal is independently made by light hitting your eyes. And that's why we don't necessarily want to, put our sunglasses on first thing in the morning. I live on Siesta Key. I go down to the beach and I see all these old people walking up and down, and it's like 7:30, 8 in the morning, and they got their sunglasses on. And they're missing out on this, not only this powerful activator of our circadian rhythm, which one of the most powerful ways that we can do that is watching the sun come up, watching the sun go down. But we're also during the day, and as much light as we can get in our eyes in a safe way, right? If you're not used to looking at the sun, you don't want to just go out there and start blasting it because you can injure your eyes. But the eyes can be slowly conditioned to accept more and more light in a safe way. So you want to kind of dive into this responsibly. But the payoff is deep sleep and incredible vitality, because when you sleep, so you have to look at like hormones, right? So I'm sure you've talked a lot about cortisol, right? We talk about cortisol and how it might relate to physical endurance and activity, right? Well, the opposite, so that's the sympathetic nervous system. And you want your sympathetic nervous system to be upregulated when we're in an athletic event and we're training. But we also want that brake system to kick in so that sympathetic isn't runaway, right? Like you're going to get some tachycardia. You could get some shunting of blood to a lot of your muscles and also your brain. So the parasympathetic nervous system is the primary buffer that kind of augments, the sympathetic nervous system, and its primary hormone that regulates that is melatonin. And it's pulsed just like cortisol is, except melatonin's pulsed at night. And so by that powerful parasympathetic activation is so important, like for heart rate variability. If you don't have a strong parasympathetic nervous system, then the heart rate variability is going to go south. You're not going to have that balance. And what's interesting, if you look at the graph on heart rate variability as we get older, you could almost superimpose that graph of melatonin, because melatonin, and I don't know if you tested your heart rate variability before and after the Sandman supply. That's we have a line of products that are both oral liposomal, but we also have a delivery system with suppositories, which is really the ideal way to take melatonin, just not only because oral melatonin tends to be about 2.5% absorbed. And so rectally, it's much, much higher. And it also slow releases throughout the night.
I didn't monitor my HRV that night, but I'm very good about monitoring my HRV. And I can tell you, just speculating here, that when I woke up that morning, I felt like it was a very high HRV day. You know, I noticed that the days that I wake up feeling the most refreshed, my HRV trends way up, you know, nice and suddenly, nice linear upward trend. And I'll wake up and have like, I don't know, 120 average. It's pretty high HRV. I felt really good that morning. I felt refreshed and ready to kick some ass. That's how I felt. And I wasn't, and you could say, oh, placebo effect, but I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting the opposite of that. I was expecting to wake up feeling sluggish, but I woke up feeling ready for action. I actually made fun of Ben and River and Taryn for not waking me up. And I said, I beat you guys to it and I'm ready to go and kick some ass. So interestingly enough, I felt really good. And I would argue that I did have very high HRV that day.
Yeah, that's great. And then you guys did the Zen Mist after that?
We did that. I don't know if because we did the Zen Mist the night before, and then we did some breath work, but then we did it again in a meditation session, not that day, not the next day, but I think the following day. We woke up early and did some of Ben's new breath work. I think he's doing his own guided sessions now. We did a very intense breath work routine, and we snorted some of the meditation mist. That stuff is really powerful. Powerful.
So you did the breaths, and then you did the mist at the last like inhale.
No, we actually did the mist and then the breath work. My bad. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I went to visit Ben, and we had, you know, it already been because we manufacture, just so your people know, like MitoZen is my company. And we manufacture a lot of products that I think we're going to be talking about some of them. But the meditation mist is based on Amazonian hape, which is it has nicotine in it, and it's a Amazonian tobacco called mapacho, right? And so we make an extract, and we make one with some mint. We make like a minty essential oil one that's more kind of like cannabisy CBG. And then one that's just kind of like a raw, more of an extra strength version.
The one that you gave us had the neuro CBG, oxytocin, and the Amazonian herbs.
Yeah. And then it's got the oxytocin. And so what that does is it activates the vagus nerve in a very powerful way, because our face, have you heard of the dive reflex before?
Yeah. I'm a free diver. I'm a big time free diver.
Okay. So you know, it's that cold that's on the bridge of the nose primarily, right? And so if we fall into cold water, right, it like shuts down. It's like powerful vagus activator, vagal nerve activator.
Yeah, to help us essentially hold our breath. And it's like when I'm getting ready to do some free diving and spearfishing, I'll splash some cold water on my face right before I get in the water, like as I'm putting my gear on, to kind of simulate that response. And as soon as I'm in the water, I'm a little better prepared to dive deep. And it's interesting because when I took the Hop A, one of the first things you notice is it's like rush of blood to the head. But what I noticed in particular was, and you really get to see this when you do the breath work, with every inhale, I got this like massive rush of like sympathetic activity. Like my body was tingling, vibrating. And then with every exhale, you know, through the nose, using the belly or the diaphragm, nice and slow. I mean, this parasympathetic activity just kicked in like a train. Like it's almost like my body was shutting down. So I told Ben, I was like, I've never experienced such exaggerated ends of both of these branches of the autonomic nervous system in one sitting. It's like I get this super sympathetic activity, and then I get to like regulate it and go in the complete opposite direction immediately. And that I think would overwhelm most people.
Yeah.
But it was like being there with Ben, trusting him, I really just had to, I remember feeling like I was like, I just have to keep my shit together for like a couple more seconds and ride this wave. It was really intense, but so much fun.
Yeah, I've done some breath work sessions with the Zen where I mean, I was with God, you know, just the pineal, you know, if anyone's followed like Joe Dispenza, you know, he talks a lot about how we have this, you know, kind of sensory system through the pineal where we're connected with the divine, right? I mean, it's really interesting. And so the pineal seems to be activated with that. The other thing, there's this connection with the nasal passage and the pineal, but also one of the things that I've done with Ben and his kids as well, I'm not sure if you've heard about this endonasal balloon adjustment.
I don't think I've heard about that, no.
Oh, Andreas. So this is what we're going to do when you come in.
Okay,
so in
what's
December,
that?
Ben and I are doing a conference here, Elements of Vitality, right? And so you're going to be coming as my guest for sure.
I love this, that. Awesome.
This is called functional cranial release, and I use a balloon. I place it in through the nose, and it literally adjusts all the bones of the cranium, and it releases this deep connective tissue called the dura mater in Latin. This is literally the name of this structure, and that means tough mother in Latin, right? And it gets bound up, like virtually all of us have collapsing cranial structures. And I started doing a lot of this work with UFC. In fact, I fly out tomorrow and I go see Dana White because I've been working with him personally. And usually when I go out there, he'll have like a couple of fighters he wants me to treat. But for an athlete, wow. Andreas, this is like next level, because not only getting oxygen, you've read all the books. I wrote a whole book on this as well, where we get into the science of nasal breathing and all the detrimental things with mouth breathing. But what happens is the cranium gets jammed and it's not moving. And so you don't have this movement of cerebral spinal fluid. And that's one of the things that really help not just the brain and spinal cord stay healthy, but also the pineal. So doing that in conjunction with this Zen mist is something that we've been working with.
Oh,
with
wow.
Some ketamine experiences here, because we do some ketamine assisted therapy. We call it Into the Mystic, right? And so we have we do intravenous methylene blue, red light therapy, this device called a CVAC, right? Which is, it's like this big $150,000 like pod. Are you familiar with TRT or sound wave, shockwave therapy? We do shockwave along their spine and their hands. We call that opening the gates. And then I do this balloon treatment in more of a ceremonial fashion. And then we do like intense breath work for like an hour. And then we get people, oftentimes we'll put them on like a vibroacoustic device and administer some ketamine, and it's really amazing.
And how did you come up with this clever blend of therapies?
Well, I started studying psychedelic medicine, you know, probably about 6 years ago, and it was Ben and I worked with the same shaman, you know, early on. That's one of the ways Ben and I got really close together, was we were both kind of diving into this like kind of alternative spiritual practice that was just this mystical experience. And I started training with this group, and this was actually one of the ways that the Zen mist was born, because this group was really into doing this hape, which is generally done with this powder that really burns. And so I was already making some different nasal sprays, and so that's where I kind of started to formulate the Zen mist. But it's just something that I feel like is the future of mental, emotional, spiritual well-being. Because what's happening is, what we have to get out of our own way, right? There's our ego, which is our mind, and the mind has got to create problems to solve, right? But ultimately, there's nothing really to fix. There's nothing to solve. If we can just be and just be calm and be present in the moment. And I think that's why a lot of your listeners are probably doing a lot of extreme sports, and why you might be diving. And that's why I love to go surfing and kite surfing, is because you get into like what the Buddhists call no mind, right? You're in the flow. and we feel better in that flow. And so the default mode network is the scientific name for this ego. It's where our sense of identity exists. And oftentimes, this can cause a lot of suffering for people, because it depends on how they identify themselves, right? And there's a lot of subconscious aspects to this identifying themselves where it's very destructive, right? So we could say there's a lot of weeds in that garden. And so what these medicines allow is this default mode network to drop, right? In fact, the endonasal balloons lower that default mode network. There's some really interesting neurology. We probably don't have time to get super deep into it, but with the nasal passage and the facial nerves and something called the locus coeruleus, or in Latin that means blue spot, which is the primary regulator of noradrenaline or norepinephrine in the brain, which is that's the major stress response, right? So our ability to handle and control that, and certain emotions come up which can trigger these like almost hyper exaggerated stress responses. So by lowering this default mode network, we can get the ego out of the way, we can get the identity out of the way, and we can start doing some gardening in our emotional body and start getting rid of some of those weeds that aren't serving us and fertilize some of the things that we are, that are.
It's interesting that you mentioned this, because I was recently tuning into a Huberman podcast on ADHD and Vyvanse and Ritalin and Adderall. And, you know, I'm someone that was diagnosed with ADD. I took medication for years. And he describes the default mode network and how folks with ADD and ADHD have like this, a lot of this is like mental chatter, that it's difficult to turn off. And as a result, it's difficult for them to focus on the things that they, in a sense, have to do. And it's interesting the way that you describe this, because now I'm thinking how much of that is related to my ego, which is maybe another conversation for another time. But interestingly enough, I find that when I partake in these activities that demand that kind of presence, that it translates to hyperfocus in and out of the activity. What I mean by that is when I'm spearfishing and freediving and road cycling and doing all these extreme sports, if you will, really they're just environments and activities that demand extreme presence. Even this podcast, for example, I find that when I'm doing this consistently, that outside of these activities, my focus, my drive, and my attention, my ego subsides, and I can just be myself and do the things that I'm here to do. So it's interesting the way they've described that, and I'm very curious to see if there's a relationship between this and ADD or ADHD directly, and how it may describe the hyperfocus that folks with ADD can find if they put the medication aside, or they find a way to really be their authentic selves and bring their natural genius to life. You know, so I know this is a bit of a loaded remark here, but what I'm trying to describe really, if I can summarize it, is I find that when I do more of the things that really require intense presence, that my quality of life outside of those activities improves. Whereas if I'm not doing the things that really give me a sense of thrill, I find that I'm generally detached and uninterested in life and in my work and my responsibilities.
Well, what you're talking about is the salient network, right? This is where we have a spotlight and we're focused on a specific thing. And, you know, this is a great conversation to bring in the blue spot, right? The locus coeruleus, because the locus coeruleus is really what is going to dictate where your attention is and to how much, you know, how much veracity we're going to be focusing on something. Because like if a predator comes out, right, we're going to have an attention to that predator and we're going to have noradrenaline kick in, right? Because we need to like, oh, I need to put my attention on that. This is really important. Nothing else really matters. And that kicks in and it allows us to hyper-focus on different things. But sometimes that can be too much, right? Sometimes we have a hard time having that flexibility in the locus coeruleus where we can have it fired up. And it can, so it when we're talking about this, it has to do with the frequency that it's firing, right? So the frequency of the locus coeruleus is between 0.5 all the way to about 14 or 15. And so when we're up in the high frequency, this is going to put the brain in high alert and we're going to be like super focused, right?
Is this in Hertz? Sorry, the unit?
In Hertz.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is what's really fascinating is that in order for us to, I think, lead a normal, sane life and to be able to mature, and as we get older, to basically be a better person, right? We have to be able to remember things that happen throughout the day and take those memories and transfer them to our long-term memory, but also sort it all out like artificial intelligence. It comes in and it makes sense of what happened and what how that relates to other things that have happened. And when that happens is in REM sleep. This is when the really important part of sleep, where we're we're updating our memory banks from the locus coeruleus. So the locus coeruleus is almost like a thumb drive. And if we don't pause that locus coeruleus, so a pause means one or less hertz, right? And so if we can't pause it, we can't do what's called memory consolidation. And memory consolidation is something that a lot of people are looking at right now and as a big issue with like PTSD, right? Because if we have a traumatic event, or it could even be not such a traumatic event, but we make it so, we'll perseverate that. So we'll be constantly telling that story over and over again, versus that goes up to the higher banks in the cortex, and eventually you work it out, right? But that doesn't happen with everybody. And it doesn't happen with everybody because they don't have the ability to take that locus coeruleus through that full scope, right? They can go up into the higher frequencies, but they can't bring it back down. So you should be able to bring that down and silence it at night, especially, right? Or sometimes during the day, we want to be able to hang out, do some breath work, do some meditation, and calm that locus coeruleus down. And if we can't do that, you get into that over-adrenalized state, right? We're hyper-focused for too long, and we get that adrenal burnout, yeah, that overtraining, you know, it becomes very damaging to the body.
And so you want to have just enough where you can regulate your nervous system in your body so that you're prepared for the next day to learn, to continue to refine your skills, to continue to go harder in the gym, to get fitter, faster, stronger. You want to have a good balance. Otherwise, you're going to go into overdrive, and as a result, eventually, you're going to get burnt out, and then you're not going to retain any of the information or any of the strength or any of the energy or even the libido, if you want to take it to that extent. So how do we find this natural balance between high performance and strength? And essentially, how do we calculate where hormesis occurs? And how do we find the right balance at the daytime and at the nighttime, maybe related to melatonin, so we get the best of both worlds? Awesome sleep and recovery, but also high performance.
Well, it comes back to the mitochondria, right? Everything comes back to the mitochondria. And when the mitochondria is not firing or not able to like provide that life force to the cell, then we can't adapt. So that's going to be what's regulating that ceiling in hormesis. And we talked earlier, this is something that declines with age naturally. But it's the level of inflammation in the body that's really going to make a big impact on the strength of our mitochondria. And the strength of our mitochondria is going to dictate the strength of the most metabolically sensitive cells in our body, meaning the cells that need the most energy are going to suffer first, which is the brain, the central nervous system. And specifically, a big one is this locus coeruleus. And one of the best strategies I found that's really, really easy for people with this is looking at their doorways, right? So I call it taking care of your doorways, because this is the low-lying fruit where inflammation, hidden inflammation, gets into our system, the nasal passage, the mouth, and the colon. And so oftentimes there's microbial overgrowth in these areas, and it could even be not necessarily in the gums, but it could be like in the jawbone, right? So like biological dentists do a lot of work, and like there's a cone beam by a biological dentist that you can get. And sometimes we have pockets of infection we don't even know about. Root canals can be something like that. If you're not doing something on a regular basis for nasal hygiene, you're probably having a significant lowering of your life force because you get a lot of sticky stuff in there in biofilm naturally. And so did Ben share the Glutastat nasal spray with you? That kind of like essential oil?
No, he had peppermint spray. I don't know if it's the same one, but I just want to quickly jump in and say that I'm particularly interested in the nasal passage and its performance because something that I notice at an extreme when I go spearfishing and freediving, because if that's not cleared up, I can't equalize properly and it has a dramatic impact on my dive. So I'm very, very particular about how I'm sleeping, how I'm breathing. Before, you know, leading up to a dive, I take all kinds of, I take a supplement called Sinus Relief by Beekeepers Naturals. It has like bromelain, vitamin C, and a bunch of immune boosters and different, you know, ingredients that support the sinuses. And I also avoid, you know, dairy and extra saturated fat. Anyway, I'm very, very interested in this topic because I'm so conscious of my nasal passage and my sinuses. So please continue and do share how this supplement works and what it does.
Yeah, well, so the Glutastat, this was the product that Ben and I think it was the first product Ben really got excited about, and it happened to be right when COVID hit. And so this was my answer to an antimicrobial nasal spray that's mostly essential oil. So there's emulsified oregano, sage, clove, bay leaf. Linalool from lavender is actually very, very good for the sinuses. NAC, colloidal silver, and glutathione, right? So glutathione could be really, really helpful. And so this is formulated into a nasal spray, but it's also formulated into a larger dropper bottle that you can put in a nebulizer, because sometimes you want to get this up more into the sinuses deeper or into the lungs. And so we've seen some real great benefits with both our patients and a lot of clients with not only just nasal, you know, just nasal and upper respiratory hygiene, but also preventing a lot of infections. Because let's say you're on a trip, right? You're traveling and you start to get that scratchy throat. Well, that started in the nose, right? So if you're not taking care of your nasal passage, it starts to build this sticky, like gelatinous protein type of layer called biofilm. And then the biofilm acts like flypaper for anything in the air. So if you're exposed or next to somebody in the plane that might have an infection and they cough or sneeze, well, you've got this stickiness in your sinuses and it's going to stick in there and it's going to act as a petri dish for it to grow in your nasal passage. And then it starts to like multiply and spread into the rest of your body. Then it goes back to the throat, drips into the gut, goes into the lungs. So if we can stop it right here or prevent it from even starting, it's going to be a tremendous asset for a lot of people to prevent them from getting sick or to stop something from progressing at the early signs.
That's incredible, because already just nasal breathing alone, you know, with the increase in nitric oxide that is also, you know, an potent antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, dilates the sinuses and such. I mean, I think pairing these two together and really optimizing your nasal passage and its function in the sinuses. I mean, it's especially traveling, because that's one thing I didn't mention is when I travel on these trips, I always get a little, you know, frustrated about, you know, what if I sit next to someone on the plane, or what if I, you know, there's some kind of pollen or something in the air that's going to get me sick right before my dive. You know, all of a sudden you spend thousands of dollars on this trip and hundreds of hours, and, you know, due to the function of your nasal passage, now you can enjoy what you signed up to enjoy. So I would be very interested in trying this out. And I'm also, you know, you recently mentioned this flow of cerebral spinal fluid. I want to get your take on something that I learned around the time that I had COVID and my family got COVID. And that's that the nasal passage is like a lymphatic drainage site for the brain. And when we have this kind of infection, like COVID, your body's really fighting hard to get rid of this gunk in the brain. But because of the inflammation, you have this, you're pressing up on the nerves. It's the reason why you lose your sense of smell and taste. And it wasn't until I met another doctor, I think he's a chiropractor as well. He was telling me that through deep sleep, and here's the link with melatonin, through deep sleep, you promote the flow of cerebral spinal fluid, the brain can drain itself through the nasal passage, and you can all of a sudden breathe better and you get a sense of smell and taste back. So that's a another long-winded way of saying that I really appreciate supporting the nasal passage, and I'm very curious to hear your take on this relationship with the nasal passage and the flow of cerebral spinal fluid that you mentioned previously.
Yeah, well, the cranium, Weston Price was a dentist. He traveled all over the world, and he wrote a book called On Physical Degeneration. They consider him the father of the raw food movement, and he would talk about how the teeth crowding is not something that they have a problem with in Aborigines, right? People that live off the land. It's not until we started to live in industrial culture that we started to have a lot of the crowding of the teeth, which is a response to the narrowing of the palate, which means like our cheekbones, which make up our maxillary bones, they collapse in. And then our nasal passage then suffers because it gets collapsed. And as that starts to collapse, the septum buckles because there's not enough room. And so you get like the septum will often buckle either to the right or the left because it needs to make some room. And so this nasal passage not only is closed up, so we're not, you know, these individuals aren't able to breathe very fully through the nose, but the cranium has what's called, you know, it's jammed. There's bound up tissue, that dura mater is bound. And so there's something called cranial rhythm. And cranial rhythm is this movement pattern that the cranium makes, and it makes it in conjunction with the sacrum. And that's why you've heard of like cranial sacral therapy. And so this cranium is supposed to move. And so that movement is distributing and moving nutrients and cerebral spinal fluid around the brain and spinal cord because it has an active pressure, right? Our breath creates some pressures as well. And that pressure is what helps to stimulate the production of cerebral spinal fluid through these choroid plexuses that are in our ventricles. So they respond to the pressure by producing more CSF. So a lot of us are not only low with CSF, but our the movement is compromised. Normally every 12 hours, cerebral spinal fluid completely flows around the brain and spinal cord, and it carries all kinds of nutrients, and it delivers, it helps to help detox the brain. And like you said, you know, through lymphatics, a lot of these toxins are removed. I think that melatonin and glutathione, if you look at both of those molecules for detoxing the brain, they can be really powerful because glutathione passes the blood-brain barrier, and it's like this sulfur helix that like wraps like flypaper around toxins and then can carry it out of the body. So and that's one of the reasons that I like to include both glutathione and melatonin in, and that might be another reason why you felt so fresh. And glutathione can really improve our inflammation in our body, right? So taking glutathione or precursors to glutathione like NAC, a lot of people with allergies find a lot of relief, right? So so that might be something for the listeners to look at. If they're having a lot of problems with nasal congestion, then there are some techniques that, like we talked about, that are like these balloon adjustments that can like expand these nasal passages. If you're having a hard time breathing through your nose, you're definitely not going to have the same athletic abilities for sure, because of some of the things that you pointed out, you know, with nitric oxide and just getting oxygen, you know, easily into the nasal passage. And then looking at the flora and the health, doing something for hygiene in those nasal passages. So it can be really helpful. In fact, those two things are often like kind of like some of the beginning things that I look at with all my patients. Even if I don't do the balloons on people, almost across the board, I want to do a 30-day nasal sinus protocol with this glutastat, because I see just about all the chronic disease patients come in feel better just with that one thing alone.
I'll add that this individual, his name is Dr. Joe DeDuro. He recommended doing intranasal photobiomodulation, so an infrared light shining it up to the sinuses, and it, you know, if I'm not wrong, I mean, in a way, I would say works similarly to this balloon in the sense that it nasodilates. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be as intense as a balloon, but I think his theory is, you know, you're doing a couple things. You're stimulating the mitochondria, you can actually set the device that he likes, the proneural light, to a specific brainwave frequency that facilitates deep sleep. And on top of that, you are supporting the flow of cerebral spinal fluid. Also, just, you know, getting the deep sleep and opening up the nasal passage to facilitate a parasympathetic state, nasal breathing. Here you go. Yeah, exactly. That's it.
The nasal laser. Right? So these photons can get all the way to the brain. So in the nose, you're actually getting some up into the frontal lobe. Through the mouth, you're going to get the pons, which we talked about, that locus coeruleus. And, you know, so it's photobiomodulation. You're providing photons for the mitochondrial to work. So whether it's, you know, white blood cells and macrophages in the nasal passage that can help keep things healthier, or it's actually getting up, and those photons are used for energy in our brain and allows our brain to work better. Now, if you add methylene blue into that protocol, you know, now you're really talking about something powerful. Have you done much of a dive on methylene blue?
I have a bit, actually. I had a couple of the guys from Troscriptions on. I had Boomer Anderson and Dr. Ted Chicoso on the show, and we spoke about it. But if you want to, you know, share some of your thoughts with our listeners about methylene blue and how it works and how it's useful, please, by all means. I use it, you know, for energy, and I take it as a buccal troche with sometimes a small dose of nicotine and caffeine and CBD. But I've never done it in isolation. I'm very curious to try that out in isolation.
Well, so we make something called Lumitol Blue, which has a few other polyphenols in there in conjunction with methylene blue. And I differ a little bit from some of the other people that are out there talking. I've got an ebook that I released on methylene blue called Magic Bullet. And I'm in the process of the final editing of what I think is going to be the best methylene blue book, really taking a deep dive in a lot of different areas. And we talked about the blue spot, right? The locus coeruleus. And what's fascinating is the connection methylene blue has with the blue spot and our ability to even take one dose of methylene blue and have improved memory consolidation. They've shown that with people that are doing therapy for phobias, right? And so they'll have them being exposed to things they're afraid of and give them one dose of methylene blue, and they find that therapy works better because it's such a mitochondrial sensitive area. And so it sounds like you've already kind of gone in a dive on the benefits and how methylene blue work. It gets into the mitochondria, it upregulates mitochondrial function on average about 30%. And my challenge with the troches is that I didn't really feel a lot of difference, and I don't really like my mouth getting blue. I don't
think either.
It's attractive, right? Staining my teeth, etc. So Francisco Gonzalez Lima is really considered one of the foremost authorities on methylene blue. And there was a interview with Joe Mercola, and Joe asked him, you know, what do you think about the different deliveries? And he said that it absorbs great orally. And in fact, the stomach acid mixed with it actually can be an enhancer to absorb it. And he wasn't a fan of the buccal absorption. He said it's a very poor way to do it. Plus, the dosage, I think, is a bit light. So I've been utilizing it. I'm in the trenches, Andreas. So I'm here with real patients, you know, and we're using methylene blue on everything from cancer to a lot of degenerative neurologic disorder. I have a stroke patient in the next room, a lot of people with, you know, different types of Lyme disease and Epstein-Barr and infections. And then there's also people like you that are athletes that are looking to kind of get that edge, and MMA fighters at UFC. But the dosage that I'm finding, and what they look at, is about a half of a milligram to 4 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, right? And so I'll usually start people at around 40 milligrams. And the dosage that I found that people usually respond well to, and by the way, this is not medical advice. I'm simply just sharing, you know, the experience that I'm having here at the clinic. But about, you know, sometimes 80 milligrams, and sometimes if you're traveling or if you have some sort of a race or something that you're doing, you can take even a higher dose. You know, there's days where I might even take, you know, over 200, 250 milligrams, you know, or if you're starting to come down with something. Methylene blue is shown to be very powerful as an antimicrobial agent. And so this is also something that can be done for infections. Colloidal silver tends to enhance its photodynamic capacity. So taking a little bit of colloidal silver along with the methylene blue, especially if you're looking at like an infection, I think makes a lot of sense. But orally, the bar that we have, they're 180 milligrams, and you can cut it into halves or quarters. We also have a 40 milligram bar that you can cut into quarters as well for even lower doses. But there's really like this kind of camp. There's a camp that goes really low, like how low can we go with methylene blue? Because you can take 10, 15 milligrams of methylene blue, and they show that there's all kinds of crazy, amazing neuroprotective aspects to it. So I think for diving, it's a no-brainer. You should be definitely taking methylene blue when you're out there. If you had an accident and what that can do to preserve and protect your nerves. And then there's another camp that seems to be more in the deeper, like researchers that, hey, it's safe to go much higher dose on this. Depression, they did huge clinical trials on depression, and they were dosing people 300, 400, 500 milligrams a day. And they were finding that as they went higher on the dosage, the results were better with mood, because it acts as an SSRI, actually.
And let me ask you this, is methylene blue toxic at any, you know, in any amount?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. So
how do you monitor that toxicity?
Donor and electron acceptor. And when you get too much methylene blue in there, it starts to have an opposite effect, and it won't let you utilize oxygen. And so there is definitely some concerns with taking too high of a dose. There's also some concerns with taking SSRIs at the same time, especially if you're going with higher dose. With doses, you know, in the realm that we're talking, generally they're okay, but there's this thing called a serotonin storm that can be 30% of people that get this, it's lethal, right? So you don't want that to happen. And that happened with a group of people that were getting a surgery, and they were having, it was something like 500 or 600 milligrams of methylene blue, and it was intravenously, and they were on SSRIs. So, you know, for sure, if you're kind of below like 2-3 milligrams per kilogram of body weight, my opinion would be that you're safe. The opinion of Francisco Gonzalez Lima would be that you'd be safe. If you're on SSRIs, you're probably taking them because you're depressed. And if you're depressed, you probably have a chronic infection. And what's happening from that chronic infection is you're getting too much of the bad nitric oxide, the induced nitric oxide. And then this is what activates depression in our system. This has been very, very detailed in research with depression. And so,
well, that may be some kind of trauma, but you're saying that this can maybe exacerbate some kind of life experience that is depressing.
Well,
is there such thing as depression, in your opinion? Is there such thing as depression independent of an infection?
There's a lot of gray here. So I don't want to sound like I'm like black or white, but I think that there's brain conditions, right? The terrain of the brain will make it easier for us to be in a lighter, happier state. And if you look at all of the different brain conditions, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, you know, traumatic brain injury, all of these neurologic conditions have depression as part of their clinical picture. So we know that when our mitochondria goes down and our brain isn't functioning, depression is something that happens, because the health of the brain is going to really allow us to be happier and more productive and feel like we have more meaning in life, right? And we can work things out. Like we talked about the locus coeruleus and memory consolidation. I think that could really serve as a huge reason for people to get depressed. That's actually in the research, is depression, anxiety is really based on the health of that locus coeruleus. So when we have infection in the body, we're upregulating a lot of inflammation. We're shutting down mitochondrial function through this cell danger response. And then we have this opportunity for a lot more depression, where what methylene blue does is it's so elegant because it's doing two things. One, it's antimicrobial. Two, it's mopping up. It's actually doing three things. It's antimicrobial. It's mopping up some of the bad nitric oxide. And then it's also upregulating mitochondria. So it's checking a lot of boxes for those individuals that might be suffering from depression. So if you're taking SSRIs, one thing to think about is that high serotonin inhibits memory consolidation. So if you're on SSRIs, you're already having a lot of, you're doubling your problem with where a lot of the depression happens. That's why you're seeing all these commercials on, hey, if your current prescription isn't working, add this. Partial response. They call it a partial response, right? How about it's not working? But they're going to say, no, you have a partial response. So stay on that and let's add this. You know, it's crazy. But what we want to look at is we want to look at transitioning into something that's healthier, right? We want a medicine that is beneficial to the body, but doesn't leave the body in worse shape than it was before, right? And that's why antibiotics are not a great, if we don't have to. I mean, there's certain situations where it's very important to take antibiotics, but not at every sniffles of the nose, because you obliterate your microbiome. And then your immune system is downregulated and you have more inflammation, more opportunity for autoimmune disease and allergies. And so with antidepressants, you're trying to deal with excessive inflammation in the body that's shutting the brain down. And infection, chronic infection, is almost always at the root of this. Infection and toxicity, and usually it's both, are almost always at the root of all diseases, because they're affecting the metabolism and the mitochondria. And that's going to affect our ability to adapt, and our adaptation responses are squashed. And then we grow disease in our body because we don't have the ability to be healthy, because we don't have the life force.
I think this goes back to one of the first points that you made earlier, which was, you know, if you don't have the mitochondria working properly, then all of a sudden you're just going to set the stage for a very weak system that can't fight any, you know, it'll exacerbate anything that is any weak spots, and it'll make you more sensitive to stressors in the environment, stress, you know, general stress from life. So I absolutely see the link here, and I want to say thank you for taking us through that. Curiously, what's bad nitric oxide? How do you define bad nitric oxide? Is it, I think you described it as
inducible nitric oxide.
Inducible nitric oxide. What is it? What does that mean?
There's neuronal nitric oxide, there's endothelial nitric oxide, and there's induced nitric oxide. So when we induce nitric oxide, let's say we have a big workout, right? And we're gonna release some nitric oxide to bring some blood flow into the muscles, right? And this is something that it's very common. When you look in the research, we produce less as we get older, and this can lead to a lot of cardiovascular issues and lack of more improved endurance. What happens though is that we are taking a lot of supplements. You know, a lot of people take too many supplements that are activating more nitric oxide. And infection, nitric oxide is something that's a response to infection in the body. And if you think about it, if we get an infection, we want to vasodilate because we want to be able to get our immune system to get to those microbes and to clear them out. And so oftentimes, you know, there's just an excess of too much of this inducible nitric oxide. And if you look at the research, there's actually quite a bit of diseases that are related to this chronic. So it's not bad. Nitric oxide's not bad, right? But oftentimes when we want to produce it and we need it during athletic activity, that's great. But just like the locus coeruleus needs to pause at night, we need to have pulses where we have high nitric oxide sometimes, and it goes down lower and other times. If it's always high, it's very, very toxic, and especially when nitric oxide mixes with peroxynitrates, right? Or becomes peroxynitrate. This is the most damaging substance to the endothelial lining of the blood vessels, and it's the primary cause of a lot of strokes and cardiovascular diseases. So we don't want chronically high nitric oxide. Yes, it's a good supplement. Yes, it's a good nutrient, but we want to make sure that we're pulsing it. And if you have a chronic infection and you're cranking out a lot of supplements with nitric oxide, you might be really running a big risk.
Wow. I think it's one of the major takeaways from today, because I had no idea that that was a risk. And I have certainly had times where I'm constantly taking things that would increase it for all things performance. But of course, like anything in the world, too much of anything is bad. And brings me to my next question. How do the folks that are approaching you who are in these disease states, what gets them to make the shift away from like standard, let's say Western medicine, to more of like the regenerative stuff? Like what typically helps them flip that switch, and what gets them interested in this science? And I'll say, put this as a two-part question. You know, how do you convert someone that typically is invested in Western to this type of medicine? And the second part of that question is, what does someone have to do to be on top of this new science that is, in a lot of ways, I think people would argue that it can be experimental. How do we rationalize the two, and how do we get someone to convert from Western medicine to this type of medicine?
Well, for your first part of the question, I live in Sarasota, so there's a lot of older patients, and so I deal with that and have for the last 30 years. And sometimes it can be a challenge, and sometimes it's just, you know, it's a deal breaker, you know. So an individual has to be one of two things. Either they're desperate, right, and they've had a lot of failures in the medical arena, and so they're desperate and they're going to come in, they're going to try it, and then they see results, they get excited, and then they see the light, you know. One of my favorite patients in the world, Admiral Doug Fears, he was the admiral for the Coast Guard here in Florida. He just retired. He was also Homeland Security Advisor under both Trump and Bush. He's a big deal. This guy's a big government, like, badass. And Doug came to me, he actually came to me with back pain, right? And he had been to the doctors on base, you know, and they all told him he just has to live with it. His hips were bad and his back was bad. And so he came to me. I didn't know who he was. He's on the table. We already drew his blood, and we're going to do this treatment called platelet-rich plasma. And so my assessment was his SI joint was a mess, and his iliolumbar ligaments and different things in his lower back. So we did these injections on him. We injected his hip. His labrum was a real problem. We could see all that on ultrasound. And I'm kind of narrating this for him. And so we did this. It was hugely successful. But what was really interesting is he still felt sick, right? He was still dealing with a lot of inflammation. His CRP was like off the chart. It was like a 10 or something like that, right? And I'm like, you know, Doug, we need to run some labs, right? So not the normal labs, but some of the labs like what we run here that can really dig in and see what the problem is. And it turned out that he had Lyme disease and mold illness, right?
So, oh, wow.
He must have been getting exposed to some of these big ships. But we started a process with Doug, and he's been a speaker at a couple of our summits here. In fact, Ben knows him real well because Doug spoke at the last Elements of Vitality. But this guy literally went from like not knowing anything about this type of medicine to like the biggest advocate in the world. And it was a process for him where he could feel it in his own body. He had things that were done that he could see this works, right? So an individual just has to be open-minded enough to try to be concerning enough to go to a practitioner that has the experience, and be open-minded, you know. And there's some tremendous advances in regenerative medicine, and especially in orthopedic stuff, like what we did with Doug's back, rotator cuff repair. You know, I mean, a lot of these orthopedic procedures and surgeries just are totally not necessary. But then also when we have chronic diseases, If we can find the cause of that problem and fix that, then this is a much better answer, right? Versus like if somebody comes in and they have psoriasis, so they have all this, you know, psoriasis on their skin. If we're just going to apply a cream to the skin, you know, a steroids cream, and it goes away, have we really fixed that individual? You know, oftentimes these problems come from the gut, right? And we have an infection in the gut. We have lack of good bacteria in the gut, and so we in holistic and functional medicine, we kind of strive to kind of get a little bit deeper. And so that's why we might test people a little bit more than your standard doctor does. And a lot of us don't take insurance because in the insurance model, you got like 3.5 minutes to like see a patient that the insurance pays. So you have just enough time to go in there and write a script and give a script to somebody, where this type of medicine takes a lot more work, a lot more training, a lot more experience. And then you have to have a lot of different tools, you know, available to you to be able to, you know, provide that treatment that gives that wow, where somebody walks away and they say, okay, I feel better, that worked. What else do I need to look at, right? And so then you get someone like Doug that now has red light panels and he's got PEMF mats and he's got a cryo chamber and, you know, all these different things. And it can be addictive, you know, because you feel, you probably do a lot of this yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, I love this cutting edge science and I'm really in on the optimization, the biohacking and everything. It's where I find difficulty. And honestly, this is like, I could use your help here describing for the folks tuning in how the beauty of the cutting edge, so to speak, you know, you get the new, you get the latest, you get the best, but how do we show people that this is in fact effective? Those who haven't become, let's say, desperate or who aren't open-minded, how do we convince them that this might be useful, might be effective?
Well, it's hard to answer that because it would be more like, what are we talking about? What does someone have going on where I can kind of zone in on like what, you know, I would say that what came to my mind when you were talking is if somebody's listening to this and they really want to kind of like try, like, and this may or may not work, but the majority of the people that try this, it probably will, is try methylene blue. Right? Try methylene blue and try it in a little higher dose, a little higher than 20 milligrams. You can try 20 milligrams, but don't judge it, you know, work your way up to, you know, at least like 80 milligrams, especially if you're over 150 pounds and take that for a few days. Now your urine's going to turn blue, but yeah. Across the board, I've noticed people really notice a difference with methylene blue.
You know what? That's Matt Maruca, the CEO of Roptix, who you might know. He shared a quote with me that I think pairs nicely with what you just said. And it's by Buckminster Fuller. And it goes, don't try to teach anybody anything. Instead, give them a product, the use of which will inspire new ways of thinking. And I think that for a lot of the folks who are not familiar with regenerative medicine or any of the stuff that we've discussed today, it's like, try it, see how good you feel. And I think that will inspire you to want to learn more. And I think for most people on this planet, I don't care if this offends anybody. I think it's the truth. It's most people don't know what it feels like to feel to be optimized or to be healthy. Their baseline just isn't there. And I think that when someone finally gets in touch with that baseline, even if it's momentary, if it's very, very brief, I think it can really inspire folks to pursue a lifestyle that rewards them with more and more of that energy, more of that clarity, more of that vitality. So for those tuning in, please, we invite you to try Methylene Blue and to visit Dr. J in Sarasota. I would love to visit sometime soon and really get the full scope of what you guys offer and have a bit of a, you know, have the experience on a personal level, document it, maybe share it as part two of our show with the folks tuning in.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about doing the show live, you know, that would have been our preferred way, but we're, you know, not right close to each other. But, yeah, I think a live show together would be really epic.
Yeah. And interestingly, with regards to your experience with Parkinson's, I wanted to ask you a little more about that because I recently learned that I have a genetic predisposition for Parkinson's. And like I said, I took ADD meds. I was diagnosed with ADD. And I understand that the combination of those two can increase the likelihood for early onset by like 1,000 times. And I'm curious if you have any suggestions or further ways to incentivize the habits that I already take on or to develop them further so that I can prevent Parkinson's and support my brain.
Yeah, well, I can definitely speak to this. Parkinson's is a condition I've treated quite a bit over the years. I don't know if you're aware, but I'm a functional chiropractic neurologist. So my chiropractic practice is really not like a traditional back adjustment type of thing. So I work with a lot of neurological cases, and Parkinson's is probably one of the most common ones. So Parkinson's, if you look at the substantia nigra, which is a dopamine producing structure in the brainstem, we look at the brain and we look at the gutter system of the brain kind of comes down into that brain stem, right? So all the toxins kind of come down that gutter. And that's why a lot of these structures that are very central kind of in that brainstem area are very susceptible to, you know, these chronic infections. They produce biotoxins that are fat soluble and they get into the nerves, heavy metals, a lot of pesticides. I mean, a lot of farmers are very susceptible, even if they don't have the genetics for it. But I think the genes are probably going to be more related to some of our detox pathways. The glymphatic system is very important. So we want to look at minimizing the inflammation, especially in the central nervous system. And so those doorways we talked about, the nasal and the mouth, I'll tell you one fascinating study that I read that is just completely blew my mind and really, really consolidated that I'm really on the right track with a lot of things that I'm doing. And they were talking about Alzheimer's, and they were looking at Alzheimer's, and they said that Alzheimer's starts the phase 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So even before stage 1, they found that these beta amyloid plaques start to accumulate in that locus coeruleus, that blue spot, and that the trigeminal nerve has this track that goes to the locus coeruleus, which is from the nose as well. And it seems like those plaques follow that trigeminal nerve, start to accumulate in the locus coeruleus, and then start to move up into the hippocampus. And when you look at the locus coeruleus, like all of those like short-term memory, depression, it's hardwired to your dopamine center, so they're more addiction. All of those signs and symptoms are very clear for that area of the brain, and that it's probable that it's from the doorways, right? We have microbial, it's called endotoxins, right? Endotoxins are these toxins from infection, and that's what causes all the inflammation. And then those proteins, right? With Parkinson's, it's alpha-synuclein. And alpha-synuclein, all of these different proteins are your immune cells. They're immune system cells. They're immune complexes, right? They're proteins that encapsulate, they surround these toxins, whether it's an infection or it's some sort of a toxin, like a heavy metal or something, to protect it from continually activating the glial cells, which is the immune cells in the brain. Because glial cells are kind of like a chihuahua with a bazooka. Once they get pissed off, they just start blasting neurons away, and they'll keep going for sometimes months. That's why people that have these traumatic brain injuries could wind up having more problems, even like months following the injury. So these endotoxins can get in through the brain through that route. And that's likely going to be a big thing for you to look at, because you have the genes that predispose you to it. So now you want to look at the most common low-lying fruit that could activate this from happening. So taking care of those doorways and any other infection in the body would be number one, paying attention to your sleep, right? Because you're going to kick that glymphatic system. So you're looking at, okay, toxins in, toxins out.
That is absolutely fascinating. And I think maybe for the next time when I have the chance to make the visit up to Sarasota, unfortunately, I couldn't make it this time, but when I make the visit up there, I'd love to dive deeper on Parkinson's. And if you could take me through a protocol maybe recommend supplements or a combined approach that can help me prevent this and it can help teach anyone out there what they can do to prevent all kinds of disease. I think that'd be a really, really enriched and valuable experience for myself and for those tuning into the show.
Yeah, we can make it maybe a show focused on like brain fitness, brain health.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been really, really big on that. It's really what helped me persevere and ditch the medication and what helped me flourish in this career and in this realm. And I'm actually so motivated to learn more that I'm now starting a master's in biomedical neuroscience through the University of Florida as a result, really to understand in depth what's going on in the brain and how can we optimize brain function. And I know it's a small step in the right direction. Eventually, I want to pursue more learning, but definitely looking up to the work that you're doing and want to, you know, further collaborate and learn more from you and your experience.
Andreas, you know, we share the, I was in special ed classes when I was young. I grew up in Hawaii. And so we didn't have like middle ground. It was either you were in the full on, you know, challenged class or you were in normal class. And so I was in those classes from second grade all the way to sixth. So I know what it's like. I was on Ritalin as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ritalin was, I think, the earlier version. And I think if I'm not mistaken, it's like the dopamine is bound to lysine, an amino acid. And as a result, it's like a slower release. So it works very similar to like an extended release Adderall from what I understand. And, you know, I felt like I was getting further and further from my authentic self. And I was taking that medication and I was doing it for the sake of assimilating, you know, and being like everyone else in the classroom.
Well, it's an amphetamine. Yeah. So, well, we made it through that, right? And now we can share that story. So for other people that might be in that situation, it's maybe like a good short-term fix for us to assimilate a bunch of information, but long-term, what it's going to do for the brain, and you actually permanently damage a lot of the connection with your hippocampus and hypothalamus, you know, to the higher centers of your brain. And so there's some permanent consequences for being on that for a long period of time. I think probably I've been able to overcome a lot of those, but I know for many, many years, like there was a lot of challenges I had.
Well, I think this is certainly what I want to dig into with you in depth. When I see you in person, we can talk about brain health and I can take you through my story and we can see what can we optimize. I've gotten all kinds of brain scans done that maybe you can look at. And I know that with you, it's very important to look at the entire life history before you make a diagnosis and further recommendations. Unlike, you know, everybody else in here in the U.S. and all the Western medicine folks, which are absolutely important and mission critical for all things health and well-being. But I think that what you're doing is really, really important for both the folks that have failed with those treatments or the folks that are open-minded enough to try the best and latest.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Dr. J, it's been an absolute honor and a pleasure to have you here on the show and can't wait to have you back.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise. It's been a pleasure. I think we've covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to check out that book too on melatonin. And next time around, I'll have some more specific questions for you. But I'm fascinated by this miracle molecule and all the things that it can do. I've recently been putting together an ebook on all things sleep, and I'm diving deep on circadian biology. And I think you really illuminated a lot, no pun intended, but illuminated a lot of really good science and mechanisms that I can dig into. So I'm going to check out the book and I'll make sure to add you as a reference if and when it's helpful.
Well, that'd be great. Yeah. It sounds like a great book. I'd love to read it when it's ready. But
awesome,
the book, It's All in Your Head. I get into a lot of really interesting neurology with nasal breathing and nasal health and the different cranial work that I do and memory consolidation. And you know, I think there's definitely some chapters in there that you'd really dig. So you can, both those books you can get on Amazon, or if you want, I can ship them out to you.
Yeah, please. I would appreciate a signed copy.
Yeah, I'd like to send you some products too. I definitely want to send you some of the Lumitol Blue as well. I want to see how you like the higher dose. orally.
Hey, I love being a guinea pig for all this stuff. So please do. I've already enjoyed a couple of things that I got my hands on a lot, but a couple of your products and they've made for some unforgettable memories. So I can't wait to dig into into some more. And hey, but before we get off here, I definitely want to share. You mentioned this psychedelic event. What's that about, and how can the folks tuning in get involved?
Well, so it's Psychedelic 2.0, and it's an event about sciencing psychedelic medicine and psychedelic therapy. And I've got some amazing experts coming in that are going to be bringing a lot of amazing science. We also got this entertainer, Max Major, who's like almost one America's Got Talent. He's a mentalist. He's going to be doing a show. And so it's September 15th. It's here in Sarasota. And drjohnlaurence.com is a site where we have a lot of our events at. And so you can check out that, and you can check out the Psychedelics 2.0. And then also the event in December with Ben Greenfield would be, I think, one that
that's
a lot of
the Elements of Vitality, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, I'll be at both of these events.
December 8th.
Perfect. I'll make sure to link to this in the show notes. I'll be at both events. I'm going to bring my audio, my video gear, and I'll talk to you about the experience for folks that can't make it in the flesh.
Sounds good.
Awesome, man. Well, it's been an absolute honor and a pleasure, Dr. J, and I look forward to seeing you in person very soon.
All right. Awesome.
So that's all for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in today. For all of the show notes, including clickable links to anything and everything that we discussed today, everything from discount codes to videos to research articles, books, tips, tricks, techniques, and of course, to learn more about the guest on today's episode, all you have to do is head to my website, andrespreschel.com. That's andrespreschel.com, and go to podcasts. You can also leave your feedback, questions, and suggestions for future episodes, future guests, so on and so forth. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next one. Have a lovely rest of your day.